Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Today we're talking to Victoria Van Horis, who is the founder and CEO of Second Avenue Learning. Tori is not only a highly sought-after speaker and Digital Rochester Technology Woman of the Year, she has also served as the principal investigator for both Department of Education and National Science Foundation grants. So if you want money, Tori, you need to be nice to her. Her company, Second Avenue Learning, has created two amazing gaming resources that help teachers improve their students' learning experience. The first is a STEM program called Martha Madison, and the second, which we'll be talking about today because this is a election podcast, is Voters Ed. Hey, Tori.
Hey, how are you guys doing today? Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Tori. It's a real pleasure for us, and we're happy that we're able to connect and talk about this great tool you've developed. We've been able to take a look, and we're just really interested in you, first of all. We obviously know your bio, but we want to hear about who you are, and then about Second Avenue Learning and the Voters Ed tool.
Awesome. So I used to be a classroom teacher before I started this tech company, and the whole reason I started it was because I wanted to create better resources for teachers who are teaching this next generation of kids. I had this moment where I was standing in a classroom with a piece of chalk in my hand, making a mark on a chalkboard, realizing that I was using literally Stone Age technology to teach this cohort of 21st century learners. And I was like, oh, this is just not right. So that's sort of the genesis of Second Avenue, which was really to create an alternate path to learning by creating best-in-class applications for the education market. And the first version of Voters Ed we did for the 2012 election, and I was talking to my kids, and the teachers were spinning up the election teaching with like popsicle sticks and colored pencils. And at home, the kids were watching The Magic Wall on CNN. And I was like, okay, we've got to find a way to really make the power of technology work to help teachers educate students about our election process, because it is a very complicated process. And so the idea was to really put the power of the pundits in the hands of kids and classroom teachers by making a very intuitive, interactive application that was spin-free. So no advertising and no editorial content that would make it distracting or difficult for a teacher to have a meaningful conversation in the classroom. So there are some free resources out there that everybody knows about, like 270 to Win and 538.com, and those guys do a great job. But if you're a teacher in a classroom with an interactive whiteboard and you're going to tap on their content, you have no control over the editorial stream that's going to pop up or the ads that are going to pop up. And that can be very problematic. And so we decided to create something that put history into the application, so kids had historical context, as well as give them the tools to really think about, synthesize, and predict and share their own maps with regard to the upcoming election. And so we did that for 2012. And then for 2016, we had this crystal ball here in our office that said this is going to be a crazy primary season. So I really wish I'd put some money on that, because I don't think anybody could have predicted how crazy it was.
Yeah.
And we created this a new whole section of the application to teach kids about the primaries. And by kids, I really mean like late elementary school through college, because we partnered with a couple of teachers that teach at the college level, professors Paul Ferber and Sean Sutton, and they say that their incoming students that are poli-sci majors still don't get the primary system in the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. So, and we have parents that tell us that all the time. And so now you can play with a map that teaches you about open primaries, closed primaries, caucuses, modified, and all that crazy stuff. So that you get to see how the primary system works, and then it gets you into the general election. And then you can also go back and look at, you know, elections all the way back to 1789 and see the evolution of political parties and what issues were affecting the country at different points in time, and do your own trend analysis. And so that was really the genesis behind it, was to give teachers and students tools that were relevant to them today to help them unpack and contextualize the election system.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And what we've noticed in some of the comments that we have received, Ben and I, you know, we're just a couple of cousins talking about elections here, but we're getting political science majors, or those who have majored in political science, who don't understand some of those nuances, especially of the primaries, like you mentioned. Do you notice that as a recurring thing? Like, we just don't get it.
Well, we don't get it. And the problem that we have is that our primary system is really controlled by two independent entities, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and some of the minor parties. And those parties have the capacity to change the rules. And so we've seen a couple of major shifts in the way primaries are conducted, and they will continue to shift. And unless you are a really proactive citizen, you aren't going to be aware of the nuances and changes that happen. And so, you know, after the 1968 election, there was a major reframing of the political process that led to the primary system that we have now. And even that primary system has changed multiple times since 1972, when it really first debuted. And so voters have to continuously re-educate themselves. And the nuances of this system are so complicated that it's difficult for a kid who's majoring in poli-sci to get to the, you know, individual level in 50 states to understand how each of those systems work. That, you know, so as they're educating themselves, the parties are actually changing the rules. And by the time their degree is minted, you know, the rules have changed again. And, you know, that you're in this most recent election, Bernie Sanders was really calling on the Democratic Party to change some of their rules because of some of the process problems that he saw. And that will, you know, his voice is now going to have an impact on future primaries. And so the dynamic system is a hurdle. The complexity of the system is a hurdle. And the fact that not everybody wants everybody to be fully educated is a hurdle. There's a certain power in obfuscation, and that's on both parties, both of the major parties. So creating tools to let people see exactly how the system works in a graphic way was really the challenge that we put before the team. And I think they did a great job. I love playing with a map where you can say, okay, now if I only look at closed primary states, who won? And all of a sudden, things really start to reveal themselves. And if you look at caucus states, something else shows up. And, you know, and then you can do a quick compare between Democrats and Republicans in terms of the way those rules work. And those rules are different in states. Like, you can look at one state and the Democrats have one set of rules and the Republicans have another. So, you know, it's a moving target that is complex.
It's almost like you're saying there's not a level playing field that's fair. I don't get it.
I think there are several candidates in this round of the presidential election that would say that there's not a level playing field and that isn't fair. Yeah. I think that in the current, you know, general election candidates, I think if you were to interview Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, they would both say that we don't have a level playing field. And the fact that the presidential debates are controlled not by the government or any independent entity, but by a private entity that is controlled by just Democrats and Republicans, you know, that's something that I think they would say isn't fair. Not, you know, and I'm not endorsing any of the current political candidates, but we have a discourse problem. And we have a ballot access problem, and we have a complexity problem. And so for kids that are just learning about the fact that we don't actually have a national election, that we actually have 50 state elections, and that, you know, we can tip an election by, you know, pandering to just one or two states. That's an important message for them to understand.
Yeah, fascinating. I know in my state, one party decided to have a caucus because, well, one of the people who were running in the primary was also holding a current office, so they had to change the rules, turn it into a caucus for that party. Most of the people in the state had no idea that, well, a caucus was going to happen. And then for those who did learn about the caucus, many of them stood in line for a couple hours to submit their vote.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a huge issue. We had similar issues in my state where, you know, they kept changing the rules about when you had to be registered with which party, because New York State is closed primary and a lot of people showed up to vote, and they had to vote with affidavit ballots that were never counted, and people were purged from voter rolls in certain precincts, and that caused a lot of discontent about the final outcome in the New York State primaries. And people, you know, even who were trying to be educated found themselves frustrated. So I can only imagine if you went from having a primary to a caucus and not having a good education initiative in the state to tell people about the transformation, how frustrating that must have been for your local voters.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's get back to the tool. How would, and you've talked a little bit about how this would be used in the classroom, but let's say I'm a history teacher, and I find Voters Ed on Election College podcast. What do I need to do? How do I log in? Is it something that I need to purchase? What grade levels, if I'm an adult, can I use it?
Okay, so we've actually tried to make Voters Ed really accessible throughout the country. So you can come to our website, which is www.secondavenuelearning.com, and purchase it directly. If you are a district that's Clever enabled, where you can click on it inside of Clever. And we're also, we have materials out there in BrainPop and Ed Elements and some other great places so that people have access to it. So that would be the first way to get access. We've made it super affordable. It's $1 a copy, which is as low as you can go, mm-hmm. And still have a software application that you're regularly updating and maintaining. Free isn't sustainable, unfortunately. And so if you buy it, you'll get a license. Teachers typically buy a license for their classroom in addition to their own license, or we've had districts adopt it so that they can run a school-wide mock election, which is, I can't wait to hear how those go. And there's a couple of different ways that teachers can use it. So we have a lot of teachers that use it at their interactive whiteboards so that they can actually, you know, play Wolf Blitzer in the classroom and scroll through maps and turn states different colors and dig into information. We update the polling data at least every week. And we're tracking the four candidates who are on the ballot in all 50 states right now.
Nice.
And then students can use it on just about any device except a phone, because our map doesn't really work well at phone scale, right? Mm-hmm. So it works on tablets, it works on Chromebooks, it works on PCs, and you have the ability to share a map with your teacher so you can make your prediction outcome and then send a little bit.ly-like code to your teacher and she can see the map that you've made. Teachers can save up to 10 different maps, or you can save up to 10 different maps in your personal subscription. And, you know, you can update them and change them whenever you want. So it gives you a way to sort of track the election each week between now and November 7th. We've, I think, got 35 days left, but who's counting? And And then after that, you can go back into the election over the course of the year, because we have lesson plans that are being developed for the history part of the application. So for the general election, we have lesson plans for late elementary, middle school, high school, and AP. We're actually building out more lesson plans right now to help teachers implement this in their classroom that are correlated to the social science standards as well as Common Core ELA and AP Gov and AP US. And then we're going to be rolling out election plans for a critical historical election so that the application, it can be used not just between now and November 7th, but throughout the year as you're engaging your students in a look at U.S. history.
Would you like to talk about any favorite elections?
Oh, absolutely. There are a couple of elections that I think people love to forget or don't think deeply about. I think if people go back to the election of Kennedy, people have forgotten how very close it was. And if you look at the impact of a third party candidate on that election, the difference in votes between Kennedy and Nixon in that first election was about 100,000 votes, which in a national election, we all know, is a nail biter. And it was more votes than that that swayed the 2000 election. So if you look at that election, a third party candidate had a significant impact that gave Kennedy a leg up in that election. And then the other election in modern times that many people, I think, have overlooked or perhaps want to have political amnesia about is the 1972 election, when all of the states except for Massachusetts and the District of Columbia overwhelmingly reelected Richard Nixon in the face of substantial controversy. So he's the politician that we love to hate, but we forget as a country how overwhelmingly he was reelected. And so there are lessons there that even though we have 8 minutes of tape and, you know, a bungled burglary, we ended up impeaching a president who the country overwhelmingly reelected. And if we compare that to our current candidates and most in recent elected officials, we've got, you know, literally between different administrations, hundreds of thousands of emails that have gone missing. So not just including our current candidates, but prior current and prior administrations. So we've got record retention policies that that aren't being evenly aren't being applied in an even-handed way across policy. So those are two modern elections that are very interesting. And then obviously, if you go back to the re-election of Abraham Lincoln after, you know, while we're in the midst of the Civil War, you can see what happened with the border states and what the electoral map looked like without the South. So, you know, this country has lived through a lot, and there are certainly radical transformations that have occurred in the parties. So, you know, Lincoln was the birth of the Republican Party for all intents and purposes. And that party has changed and transformed since its inception into something that I don't think he would recognize, certainly. And then I don't even think Herbert Hoover would recognize, who had the misfortune of being elected in the face of a major economic depression and then, you know, was trying to recast the Republican Party as one of fiscal conservatism. So lots of interesting elections to go and look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking about myself and all the interest I've had in the past about elections and about just different ways to be engaged. And you know, as a high schooler, even middle schooler, I've always felt like I was the only one, or me and a couple buddies were the only ones. And I really see this being a great way to, you know, your tool being a great way to engage students who would not otherwise care because, you know, let's face it, screens are now a part of our lives and are definitely a part of learning and can be used in really great ways. Do you have any, you know, awesome success stories or have you heard from anybody about, wow, this tool really impacted me in a way that I didn't expect it to, or my students in a way that I didn't expect it to?
We certainly have had those kinds of stories from teachers from around the country. One of the stories that is actually from our last, is from the last election. We had a teacher who was using it in his middle school classroom, and he had a young lady who had an IEP. And for those of you who aren't educators, it's an individualized education plan. And she was reading and doing math well below grade level. And she was actually able to come up to the interactive whiteboard and interpret the poll data and confidently call which states were swing states and who was trending in which states. And she, because we made the visual representation of quantitative data really easy for her, and she was able to have a tremendous amount of success. And it turned that whole classroom into a group of election junkies, and they ended up having a pizza party at the end, and the local news came out to cover them because they were so excited about the election. So that was great. And so making the elections accessible to kids across the learning spectrum has been great. And then we had one kid the other day who was using Snapchat to put out his prediction for the states. I was like, you're a brave man. A very brave man to be engaging in this. So kids are using social media and taking pictures of their prediction maps to engage in this conversation. And I think that one of the things that the current pundits don't understand about millennials is that they're deeply engaged in this election. And they're using media very differently. They're using Instagram. They're using Snapchat. They're using applications. And they're teaching themselves about the issues in very different ways. So it's interesting and exciting. And I had no idea that this one high schooler was going to start a Snap story, or my kids will make fun of me because I don't think I have the lingo quite right, about his election predictions. But, hats off to him.
So to our listeners, we invite you to check out Tori and Second Avenue's awesome program, Voters Ed. Just go to electioncollege.com/voters-ed, and you can find out more information there. Tori, where can people connect with you?
They can connect with me really easily. I have a Twitter handle at Tori Van V. I'm also on LinkedIn, and they can contact me via email if they want. It's a really simple email. It's Tori, T-O-R-Y, at secondavenuelearning.com. Would love to hear from you and would love feedback on the applications that we build.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a ton, Tori.
Have a great day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.